This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Dave Brown, and this is a podcast version of AMI's Morning Show, Now with Dave Brown. Catch the live broadcasts weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern on AMI Audio and AMI TV. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI. On November the 15th, Russia's anti-satellite missile test resulted in extensive debris scattering. In other words, space junk. Our environmental contributor, Lawrence Gunther, is here to tell you more about the impact of space debris. He's also the host of Outdoors with Lawrence Gunther, which you can find Sundays at 3 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio or download the podcast on your favorite podcasting platform. Hey, good morning, Lawrence.
Good morning, Dave.
So, Lawrence, first and foremost, what happened to the satellite that the Russians targeted with this missile?
Well, it was a successful strike. They hit the thing, you know, with their missile and blew it into thousands of pieces, thousands of fragments. These fragments, Dave, are moving at about 30,000 kilometers an hour. So right away, the astronauts in the International Space Station were told to get into their capsules, shelter in their capsules, because the space station was going to then move through this debris field.
Oh, my gosh.
Right, with all these chunks.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that space station's not made out of titanium. You know, anything like a little piece of metal, a bolt, anything like that could just pierce a hole right through it. So, yeah, it was a little scary times there for a bit.
Lawrence, we're going so outdoors today. We're going into space. But what do countries normally do with satellites that are no longer functioning?
There's a lot out there. And the normal practice has been to save a little bit of fuel in their, you know, their little onboard rockets that they use for positioning the machine. So in case it gets into a little spin or gets off angle, they always have a little bit of juice to fire up a rocket and reposition it as it's orbiting Earth. But they always save a little bit to just push it down into the Earth's sort of atmosphere. And then that causes it to sort of burn up. You know, if it comes in really at a low angle, not direct in, it comes in a low angle, it rubs against the Earth atmosphere, creates friction and burns up. So whatever makes it through the Earth atmosphere is pretty much just dust. And there's nothing left outside the Earth atmosphere for other things to bang into. But that's the normal practice. But that's not what the Russians had in mind. It wasn't about clearing the decks here. This was sending a message.
So what's the international response been to the creation of all the space debris caused by the missile test?
France said it was an act of vandalism. The United States said it was irresponsible. I think the whole international community was really up in arms about this and not happy. But I think, too, the message was that, you know, our satellites, they're not guaranteed to be safe in outer space. I mean, we grew up in the Cold War. I did anyways, you know, where we talked about atomic bombs being interballistic missiles coming from one continent to another. This takes the Cold War to a whole new level.
Let's jump back into the space junk concept of this, or the space debris concept of this. Is this are there other notable examples of significant creation of space junk?
Well, we've been sending rockets with satellites and space stations up into the low Earth orbit for over 50 years. That's a lot of rocket blasts. That's a lot of satellites. You know, we think there's maybe about 7,500 satellites in this skin around the Earth called low Earth orbit. It seems to be the magic sort of very thin layer where all of these things circle the Earth. They don't go further out and they don't come closer. They're just outside Earth's orbit, Earth's atmosphere. So they don't burn up, but they're close enough that they can see and communicate effectively with stations and things on Earth. Any further out and, you know, you have to look through all that stuff, right? All that stuff gets in your way. So 7,500 satellites orbiting Earth, that's quite a lot of things. Now, you know, Starlink by Elon Musk, his SpaceX program, they've launched about 1,800 satellites, small satellites the size of lunch boxes, and they're plan is to get about 40,000 of these satellites into low Earth orbit in the next few years. And that's going to mean, you know, a lot of communications that we're going to become dependent on, right? Anywhere, any nook or cranny in the Earth is going to have this ability to communicate through these Starlink satellites, 40,000 of them. Now, the Russians can't shoot out 40,000 little tiny lunchbox-sized satellites, but if there's enough debris floating around there, enough junk, these things could start just smashing into them. And then the system goes down, right? I mean, it's the internet. So you take out one server, you go around it, and you plug into the other servers. But we have that's not there yet. We're like, Starlink isn't operational in Canada a bit, but we're still dependent on these rather large, you know, bus-sized satellites that are floating around there. These are real targets. And if one goes down, systems can come to a halt here on Earth. So, yeah, there's a lot at stake going on here. And that affects us directly.
Lawrence, I feel like you've been reading some like a New Age Robert Ludlum or like Tom Clancy novels here. Like you're really, really tuned in and tapped in on this one.
Hey, I admit. I'm a spacey kind of guy. Sci-fi. Yeah,
I feel you, man. I'm right there with you. So, okay, these satellites that are now in the tens of thousands that are spinning around the world, beyond just simply obstructing our view of the stars and the planets and like this beautiful vast space, what is the impact of all these satellites spinning around?
You know, it's made us dependent, I think. You know, yeah, it's for looking up, and it's going to be, you know, we talked about this, Dave, the Starlink satellites and how they make this flickering sort of chains of flickering lights going over the atmosphere. And that's going to become more and more evident at night. Now they stop sending them up silver and they're painting them black. So that sort of addressed a bit of that. But these types of satellites are going to become more and more popular. There's African countries saying they're going to do the same thing. So every country around the world is talking about setting up their own satellite systems. It's going to become very, very crowded up there. And as we become more and more dependent on these technologies, like, you know, I like being out my boat, and all my boats have GPS now. I mean, we depend on GPS to find our way out, find our way back, to find our favorite spots. Boats and ships and captains of pleasure yachts around the world navigate by GPS. You give them a compass and a nautical map, they wouldn't know what to do with it, Dave. So, you know, that's true. And they just think this is a given. Satellite GPS communication is a given. Now, as us blind and low vision people, you know, yeah, we love this tech. We love the communication it provides us, the instant access to all that information. We love the GPS.
The GPS is huge, Lawrence. The GPS is so huge. I can't fathom what orientation and mobility in new places would have been like without GPS tech.
Oh, yeah. Like even on a bus, in a car, walking around, you know, we become the navigators, right? We're now we're not the drivers. We're the navigators.
Yeah.
You know, no, we don't want to go there. We want to go to this place. This one's got better reviews, or we want to check out this museum or this landmark. We're creating the plans. We're the admirals. We've got the captains driving our cars and ships and such. But yeah, it reminds me though, and it should remind all of us that we should never really lose touch with our skills. Like just the skill of orienting with a guide dog or a white cane in your neighborhood without GPS, or just walking around using a compass, or being on the water with a compass and knowing what a compass is good for. The compass on your phone, you know, that works without any satellites. It's just a compass on your phone. So you don't need to have any connectivity for that. You know, it's super important that we don't lose these skills, that we maintain these skills. And even, you know, communications, like ham radio operation used to be a huge, huge hobby for blind, low vision people, but it's totally fallen out. I have a ham radio. The only thing I find on those shortwave stations now are Christian, you know, sermons. I mean, they're the only ones inhabiting the shortwave radio space anymore, and good for them. But I think, you know, these stations, these ham radio stations, are still all over the world. And if satellites go down, they're going to be the way of communicating again. Radios, copper phone lines, coaxial phone lines, you know, not just internet phones. We should keep some copper phone lines in our home, and we should keep some of these other, just a plain radio. Let's not, you know, these things will come in handy. I mean, there's going to be little blackouts. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. It's just a matter of, you know, how long it'll last, but we should have some backups.
Look at Lawrence joining me in Luddite Town. Give me that corded telephone. I will take it. Lawrence, what's coming up this weekend on Outdoors with Lawrence Gunther?
Well, speaking of stepping back in time, we're talking to a young lady from the Mohawk of Akwesasne First Nations community. She started her own tincture, salves, and herbal teas business called Snipe Clan Botanicals. And she's walking us through all the different salves and medicinal, traditional sort of medicines that she's making and selling online now. And it was just fascinating. So we did some, she sent us 5 herbal teas to taste. So we tasted them as we were talking to her and just had a great time. So yeah, a real celebration and exploration of First Nations best practice in terms of health.
Love that. A little bit of spirituality, a little bit of tickling taste buds. Sounds like a fascinating show. Lawrence, have yourself a great day and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Thanks, Dave.
You've been listening to Now with Dave Brown. Hit the subscribe button on any podcast platform and leave us a rating and a review.
This was an AMI podcast. For more accessible media, visit AMI.ca.